Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Welcome back to The Shepherd's Pie, a slice of hope to raise faithful kids. I'm Tony Kolenk, a father of five, law professor, columnist for Practical Homeschooling Magazine, and the author of the Harwood Mysteries fiction series for teens. On that note, if you are a teacher or homeschooler, you'd like an author come speak with your middle school class about writing or about the Crusades or medieval life, invite me to be a speaker. I love visiting classrooms on Zoom or in person, and you can just go to my website, antonykolenk.com, put in a speaker request there. Now, on today's show, we will be speaking with Marianne Herring, author of the Fun Imagination Station series for kids, about how we can use fiction to teach history to our kids. My guest today is Marianne Herring, author of over 50 children's books, including dozens in the Imagination Station series from Tyndale House Publishers. Her latest release in that series is Land of the Lost. She's a former editor from Focus on the Family's Clubhouse magazine, and she is a freelance writer living in Colorado Springs with her family. Marianne, welcome to The Shepherd's Pie.
It's great to be here.
You've done a lot of cool things. And of course, I lived in Colorado Springs, so I know how wonderful it is there and the hub of Focus on the Family. So I'm assuming you being there has something to do with Focus on the Family. But tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into writing.
Well, I was in my 20s and I just needed a job. And a lot of my friends worked at Focus on the Family in the correspondence department. So I went and applied because I wanted to be with my friends. And I did not get that job, but they put me as the receptionist at the periodicals department. And so a couple months later, they launched Clubhouse magazine. I was chosen to be on the editorial staff. So that's where I started writing for children, and I haven't stopped since. And that was 1987.
Now, you've got over 50 books to your credit, but not all of them are in the Imagination Station series. So why don't you tell us a little bit about some of your other writing before we move on to that one?
Well, I did a few books for Cook Communications in the 90s, which did not do well, unfortunately. The thing that has been the most fun and that I feel like I'm most gifted at is the historical fiction, because I just love the research and I love turning people who are long dead into real, living, breathing, exciting people. Because if you follow the Lord, excitement just happens. So I just want kids to know that.
That's great. So I suppose most of your historical books are in the Imagination Station series. So maybe give us a little preview. What is that series about and how did it even come about being created?
Well, it's a spinoff of Focus on the Family's radio program, Adventures in Odyssey. Paul McCusker, who is a longtime writer for that series, he and I both had children who couldn't read well. And so we decided that we needed to write an easy-to-read series for kids. One of the most popular things about the Adventures in Odyssey radio series was the Imagination Station. And we knew we could do history through that. And so I said, okay, I'm on board if we get to do history.
Now, I loved Adventures and Odysseys, but the OG Adventures and Odyssey, I would say, when my kids were small, we used to listen to it on like cassette tape in the car as we'd be driving around, going from one military assignment to the next. And I actually had Brock Eastman, who is associated with the reboot of some of it, on the show here a while back. But for those who are not familiar with the Imagination Station, what is that?
The history of Adventures and Odyssey. There is a gentleman named John Avery Whittaker, and he owns a place, giant house called Wits End, and he's turned it into a fun emporium, for lack of a better word. And one of the things that he has built, he's an inventor, is the Imagination Station, where he writes programs and you can get in the machine and go visit anywhere in history. So we've started to use that as a way to launch my characters, Patrick and Beth. Those names were taken from Paul McCusker's children's names, kind of adapted those, and they also had short vowel sounds in them, so they were easy to read. So that's where those names came from.
Now, what age range is the Imagination Station series for? And you mentioned the easy to read aspect. Is that also trying to appeal to people who are having difficult maybe learning reading?
My books are really exciting, and kids of all reading levels can access them. But my target audience, really, when I'm writing these, I'm thinking 10, 11 year old boy who is struggling to read and just needs something really exciting to get him to read the book. And I mean, I do consider the girls too, but there seems to be a lot more books aimed and targeted at girls, especially in the Christian market. And so I thought, you know what, we just need something really exciting. So I lean towards dragons and knights and giants and things like that to capture the boys' attention. That's really what it is, short sentences. It just really keeps the kids engaged so they'll work to get through the book.
And about how long are these books, you know, either numbers of pages or words maybe?
The beginning ones were about 10 to 11,000. And now I've just kind of gone crazy and we're up to 15 or 16,000 words. So they're still easy to read. The chapters are usually no more than 1,000 words, so the kids can do them in one sitting.
Great. And obviously the fact that you've produced, I don't know, what are you on, number 26 or 30 of these books?
I'm writing 32 right now.
32. So the fact that you've written so many of these must mean that they are really taking off. And what kind of feedback are you getting from your readers?
They love the books. I get a lot of homeschool moms writing me, thank you. My son will read these. You know, he's already on book 6, especially for accomplished readers. The kids go through them really fast and I just can't keep up with them. But anyway, I'm pretty proud of the canon that I have of these books. So by the time a kid gets through all these, he should be well at the fourth grade reading level. That's my goal, is to have a good foundation. If they read a lot of them, they'll have tons of vocabulary and good sentence structure, and they'll be able to move on to other more advanced reading, like perhaps your books.
Yeah, you mentioned my books are also for ages 10 and up, but really I do think the and up is what I really focus on, because although they're definitely, you know, good for middle school and could be used in middle school classrooms, they're also good for high school or college age. I tried to write them definitely at a little bit of a higher level, not worrying as much about some of the things that you were just referring to. And again, I love historical fiction. Why did you choose historical fiction? I mean, you could write all sorts of, you could have wrote fantasy books that boys would have loved to read also. Why historical fiction, and why is that important for kids today?
I have to be honest, I just, you know, read history and I fall in love with those people. And so when I find a hero, I really want to encourage kids. And then there's just been so many great heroes of the faith. And I just really think that kids need to know about these people and events, special events in Christian history. I don't know, it's just an honor to present to them these people and in a way that they can appreciate and get excited about.
Now, you've mentioned faith, Christian history. Are most of the books in this series going to be focused on something biblical or some spiritual figure in history?
Most of them are. So the first one I did was on Leif Erikson, but I focused specifically on when he brought the gospel back from Europe. The king of Norway presented him the gospel, and so then he went to Greenland and brought it there. You know, Leif Erikson, I could have done, you know, 100 different angles on him, but that's the one I chose.
Now, I have an ecumenical audience, a lot of Catholics in there. Is there anything in the books that you think wouldn't appeal to Christians in general?
No. In fact, I've done quite a few Catholic characters. We did St. Patrick. We've done Telemachus. So we have featured quite a few Catholics. I just did Magellan, and he was Catholic. I try and focus on anybody who is faithful to the gospel rather than a certain denomination or, like I said, if they're a hero and they had a great faith in God, I want to write about them.
How do you present faith in these books? Because if you're trying to appeal to a young audience, especially you're already presenting history, you don't want to obviously be preachy or bore the kids. So how are you able to intertwine faith in a way that would be accessible to a 10-year-old?
Well, I usually just pick one theme and focus on that. I mean, it's very, very simple. So there's a lot of action. And, you know, part of it is just introducing kids to people and events and places. I recently wrote a book about Bible smuggling in the USSR. So part of my goal was just to have Lenin's name come up and a few key phrases or terms that you would associate with the USSR. And then, of course, I have Bible smugglers. I did a character somewhat based on Brother Andrew, but he's totally fiction. But just to show these courageous people were killed or imprisoned just for bringing a Bible across a border. Nothing deep except for the Bible is important. I mean, that's really the strong message that comes across.
So it's not like you're bringing up a whole lot of theological fine points for the kids to figure out.
I retold the story in Fear of the Spear. I have somebody get baptized. And so we just talk about what baptism means and that kind of commitment. But it's just really simple in between chasing a leopard and outrunning people who are throwing spears at you. So, yeah, I usually just have one history point or, you know, one basic point, but also, you know, get in a little bit of history there so that kids have a context. And hopefully when they come across that again, they'll bring that knowledge with them.
And what do you do about researching some of these historical figures? Obviously, some are going to be more difficult to figure out than others. What's your process on that?
Well, now it's easy. It used to be I had to go drive to Denver sometimes and use the Denver Library, but with Google, and I tend to over-research, so I don't make a whole lot of money on these books hourly because I dive in so deep. And then it's hard sometimes to figure out what is true. You know, there's a lot of biographies out there, and they just present the good stuff about people. And so I try to get a balanced view of history. And Magellan was my most difficult subject I've ever done because I wasn't going to do him until I found out that when he was in what is now called the Philippines, that he put his life on the line. And he said, you know, I'm going to pray for this person. And if he's not healed, you can chop off my head. That right there, the book just formed. And then I found out about all the mutiny and all the troubles that they had and all the animals that they discovered along their route. So all of a sudden it became, you know, a really exciting book. And I could feature him and that moment of faith.
All right. So your most recent one is called Land of the Lost, which I remember a childhood kind of corny TV series called Land of the Lost that I really liked a lot as a kid. But I suppose this is a bit different than that. Tell us, what is your premise in Land of the Lost?
Well, it's the story of Noah's Ark. For years, I've wanted to do this story, but I couldn't come up with a fresh, exciting angle where the kids wouldn't know exactly what was going to happen and how it was going to happen. And so my big point in this one is that it was God who did it. I did a lot of reading, and a lot of people on the internet were mocking Noah and the Ark, and it was impossible for it to be built, and there was just no way it could have happened, and it's one of the biggest myths. And I thought, you know, I'm going to research this. And so one of the things that I brought out was the whole issue of the tar and how they sealed it. I did actually a lot of research, and they did have the technology to do it. But mostly I wanted kids to know that even if, you know, Noah's Ark had been built today, that it was God who brought the animals, God who put it on Noah's heart to build it. I really bring out in a kid-friendly way the fallenness of the people. So the lostness of there is the lost, their souls are lost. That was really hard not to get too graphic or gory or whatever, but to clearly present the community as evil. Noah and his family were set apart for a special purpose.
Did you go to Kentucky and visit the life-size replica of Noah's Ark that they have there?
I wanted to. I watched every video that they had. I took the levels. I kind of, in my mind, when I was writing it, I had that model in my mind.
All right. So how do you get these kids then onto Noah's Ark? You know, this might be a good way to kind of demonstrate how you're getting your characters into history and how they're working in the plot with the actual historical events.
They kind of get, for lack of a better word, zapped there in the imagination station. They land and they can't really figure out where they are. Usually I have Mr. Whitaker send them. Sometimes they know where they're going. Sometimes they don't. And that's kind of fun for the two characters, Patrick and Beth, to kind of look around and try and figure out when and where they are. And so originally they think they're in the Garden of Eden because there's all these animals around that are tame. Then they figure out, you know, they're all moving towards a different direction and they finally realize that they're coming onto Noah's Ark. And Noah actually, he lets them on board. They don't actually sail with the Ark, but as they're building it, they get to help. As they're going out collecting some of the food, they're helping Noah's family bring the food on. They encounter the people in the community that are not supportive, let's say, of the Ark. And then also some giants. You know, all I needed was the line. And in those days, there were giants in the land. And so I knew I had to bring out those giants. I did some research and I went back and I thought, okay, the woolly mammoth was probably there. I decided not to do dinosaurs anyway, the woolly mammoths and the saber-toothed cats. So I kind of went with that era about 10 to 20,000 years ago.
No T-Rex versus Triceratops battles on Noah's Ark.
No, I couldn't do that. The math doesn't work for the dinosaurs to be on there, or at least in the forms that we have the fossils for.
Now, are you able to avoid sort of a creationist versus evolutionist debate in these kinds of books? Are you able to just sort of skirt that?
I don't know. I had some readers read it. I said, is this offensive? Yeah, there was some landmines in there. But I thought since the Bible mentioned the giants, I went with that. And then I kind of played it safe. That's not the point of the story. Which animals were there or alive at the time or whatever. The point is that God saved a remnant, which we'll see throughout scripture. He's always saving a remnant. And so that's pretty much the theme I wanted. God will save the righteous and he's with the righteous.
All right. So what are some of the historical topics that you're hitting in some of your more recent books that are still to be released?
I already mentioned the book that I just finished. It's called Big Risk in Russia, and it's about the Bible smugglers. Currently, I'm researching, and maybe I'll have you help me with this book. I'm researching William Tyndale. He was courageous, single-minded. I want to get the Bible into people's hands. He risked his life. He couldn't be bribed. He withstood torture.
He's in the 1530s. My books are taking place in 1185. So just a few years before William Tyndale. There's no Reformation in my time frame.
Yeah, so I'm excited about him. A few of my favorite books, my Battle for Cannibal Island was my absolute favorite. I think it just still comes out because I did not know the dedication of the Methodist missionaries who went to Fiji. I was just blown away by their faith and courage. So introducing kids to those missionaries, it just was an honor. I cried when I was reading their journals. They were all in.
So let me ask you this, though. So we're using all these different imagination books to teach younger kids history. So maybe just let's talk about that for our last few minutes. How is it that fiction is a good vehicle for parents or teachers to use to teach history? You could have written biographies of William Tyndale just as easily. You know, why fiction?
Fiction reaches your head and your heart and helps you explain human motivation and human behavior. There's studies that fiction readers have more empathy and they understand human behavior better. So I've always hung on to that. It's just easier to reach kids' hearts. I just think fiction draws a more complete picture of history rather than just the facts.
That's interesting to say it like that, that fiction draws a more complete picture of history. It allows us to bring out truth the way an artist might bring out somebody's nature through a painting of them. If people want to get a hold of the Imagination Station books or learn more about you, where should they go? What websites or other social media would you direct them to?
Well, you can find out about the books at the Focus on the Family website. You go to theimaginationstation.com, they'll all be there. MarianneHerring.com, I have all the books featured. And I need to work on updating it because I usually have the book coming up. And then as soon as I get the cover for the next one, I pop it up there and let people know. On my website, you can also get vocabulary lists for most of the books. I'm trying to get through all of those and post those. So I know I have at least the first 13 books. So if parents and homeschoolers want those, they can go to my website and download those.
Excellent. All right. So talking about fiction and reaching kids is a good segue into my entertainment segment. In our entertainment segment, we like to ask our guests if they have any books or movies that they would recommend to families for their kids or teens. And Marianne, I understand you actually do have something that you would recommend folks to read.
Yes, over the last 2 years, I've been privileged to edit Amanda Cleary Estep's series, The Tree Street Kids. And I'm just blown away by what a great writer she is and how fun those books are. They're for kids, I would say, like fourth grade, give or take a year. Her characters are just so well drawn and unique, but they're also like everyday kids and have, you know, the same struggles. And it's set in the 90s, which actually helps her with plot. I was trying to do a modern mystery. And how do you keep anything a mystery if you have a cell phone? You know, there's no delay of information or any of the tried and true ways to build suspense. So anyway, her kids are set in the 90s. They do not have cell phones. They do have a few video games that pop up. It's just a wholesome community, but they face some real trials. And even her bullies are not stereotyped. They're real kids with real problems. And so she's able to portray these kids and what they do is wrong, but she also has some sympathy for them. And so her characters just can't write those people off. They have to interact with them and behave in a Christian way to find resolution. But mostly they're very interesting characters and you really care about them as soon as they're introduced. You're invested in that little town.
And you've been editing some of these. What's that like? Maybe just sharing, editing Tree Street Kids. What do you have to do with that?
You know, basically Amanda doesn't need a whole lot. I mostly do what editors do, help eliminate anything that doesn't move the plot along. And my book's the same way. If I get too bogged down in history or detail that maybe the kids will start losing interest in, you know, my editor flags it and we either cut it or rewrite it or do the same thing. So I just do a basic edit on those books and clean up the grammar as I go, but there are proofreaders behind me, so I don't have to do too much of that. Amanda is a joy to work with. So that's part of it. She's just fun.
Yeah, we had her on the show last season. She was wonderful. And what is the basic premise of these Tree Street Kids books? I mean, is there kind of a certain formula or groove that they get into for each book?
You know what? That's what I like about them is they're not formula. Jack is the main character and he moves from the farm where he was very happy and had chickens and friends there and lots of acres to roam. And then he comes to the suburbs where all the streets are named after trees, elm, oak, cherry. And one of the jokes in the book is someone lives on Cherry Street and there's not a cherry tree in the, on the block. So he has to make friends. And the friends that he makes, there's four of them, and they get a clubhouse in a bomb shelter. So that's interesting in itself, how they discover that and the era. And the neighbors are delightful and quirky and fun. And so usually there's a mystery or a small problem. They're not out to save the world. They're just out to save their block. Ellison is one of the characters. He is African-American and very literary. His whole family is literary. So he's always reading these deep books. And Jack, you know, maybe reads a cereal box cover, you know, while he's eating breakfast. So they're opposites in a lot of ways, but they both care about people and join together and learn from each other. They get lost. They get found. They worry about their pets. They have hobbies. Anyway, they're just normal kids, but the way Amanda draws them, you just really get engaged. That's all I can say, is she really is a good fiction writer and developing character.
Wonderful. All right. So the Tree Street Kids series by Amanda Cleary Estep. All right. So my final question to you before we wrap up then is, if you have any advice, if you have a parent or a teacher in front of you and they're like, hey, I'm really trying to figure out how to teach history to my kids, you, a fiction author, historical fiction, any tips or advice for them?
Keep at it. You'll find what works for your kids. Not everything works for, you know, all kids. There's such an abundance of material out there. So maybe it is listening to podcasts. That's how I started researching William Tyndale, as I've listened now to about four podcasts. Not all of them are kid friendly. There's a wealth of books. I liked, for my kids, Jean Fritz. She has a lot of American history biographies, but she's able to make them really fun. So I would just say keep it fun. Have a lot of crafts. They'll pick it up if you highlight them. Go outside the curriculum if you have to. There's a lot of hooks out there, and they'll develop a love for it if it's presented well.
All right. Good advice. And Marianne, I appreciate you coming on the show today and sharing about your series and about essentially how we can reach kids through our fiction. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate what you do and want to just encourage all the parents to keep listening.
And thank you for that. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for the show today. So we've been speaking with Marianne Herring about using fiction to teach history to our kids. Again, this is Anthony Barone Kolink. If you have a question for me or a topic you want me to cover, just drop me a line on my website, anthonykolink.com. And that's where you can also learn more about my historical fiction series, The Harwood Mysteries. Until next time, may God bless you and your families as we work together to raise faithful kids.